everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you. I am so glad the wind has moved across, well, it's moving across the country. It's moved out of our area pretty much. Tom Fairbanks with me on the other side of the glass. Tom, it was a windy day.
I heard we hit peaks of around 65 miles an hour in this area.
Yes.
But then I also heard they hit around 92 miles an hour over in Greeley County somewhere?
Yeah, I think it's an unofficial total reading of 90-some mile-per-hour winds.
Wow.
In one of the rural counties, Greeley County, perhaps.
Yeah,
and I see on Facebook the Caruso sign in downtown Tucson. Over on 4th, which had been there for forever, Caruso's Italian restaurant, it fell yesterday during the windstorm, and they're now putting it back together, putting it back up. So, quite the day. Anyway, here we go. It is a new day. It's Thursday, the 23rd of February, 2023. Our show is in its 13th year. We broadcast from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station 1030, KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, our live line for our telephone interviews, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Well, Valley Fever is a fungal infection that is commonly found within parts of Arizona and California and other areas in the Western Hemisphere. It is notoriously underreported due to a lack of testing, but a new study finds Valley Fever training does improve early recognition of the disease, especially in urgent care settings. Let's welcome now on the live line Dr. John Galgiani, director of the University of Arizona-based Valley Fever Center for Excellence. Dr. Galgiani, a professor at the University of Arizona College of Medicine in Tucson. Dr. Galgiani, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you? Nice to talk to you, Bill.
Doing pretty well. This is optimistic news that this study results show that in a clinical setting, the doctors are ordering more testing for Valley Fever, and that's good news.
Yeah, I think so. We had found in a previous study that there was a surprisingly low number of people being diagnosed with Valley Fever in the urgent care group, which is a large segment of Banner Health. And we thought we'd try to change that. And so we launched a training program, which was rather simple in design, just every few months told the clinicians they ought to be looking for it in the right kind of patients. And as a result, we were able to quadruple the number of people being tested for Valley Fever. And there was therefore actually quite a striking increase in the number of cases diagnosed, up three or four fold, actually. And we still have a ways to go, but I think it demonstrates that the more we make it known, the more likely physicians are going to do the testing. It actually still is something that people should know about, because State Department of Health data showed that people who know about Valley Fever are more likely to get their diagnosis sooner, because they're going to ask their clinician, don't you think you should be testing me for Valley Fever when they get sick?
What do these people present as? They present that they have chest pain? I mean, what is the presentation in a clinical setting that can be very confusing?
Well, Bill, you and I have talked about this several times. You almost have this down pat.
Yeah.
It is a pneumonia sort of syndrome, chest pain, cough, a lot of fatigue often. People are very strikingly unable to climb a flight of stairs, for example, as a result of this. And those symptoms are not specific for Valley Fever. In fact, they overlap with influenza and COVID and bacterial pneumonia. In fact, often these people are just routinely treated as if it is a bacterial infection, even though it's a fungal infection, and antibacterial drugs have no real benefit.
What do people do if they are diagnosed with valley fever? What can be done for these people, Dr. Galgiani?
Well, the knowing what is actually going on is very valuable in itself, because you stop having to worry, what is it? And that means less diagnostic tests. Sometimes that could lead to actually surgeries or things like that. So you could stop doing that once you know what you got. Also, you'll stop using antibacterial treatments, as I say, which would be of no benefit. Sometimes patients would benefit from getting started on an antifungal drug, but the good news is that many of these people who have valley fever will eventually, after weeks sometimes or even months, get over this, whether you treat it with an antifungal drug or not.
So, what about a vaccine? And we've talked about this before. I know that there's work underway. Could you give us kind of an update on what's going
on?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. We're very excited about a vaccine that was developed at the University of Arizona. And it is actually on track to become a product to be used by veterinarians, hopefully within the next year, to prevent valley fever in dogs. And that same vaccine very possibly would have the same beneficial effect for humans. So we're now turning our attention to not only finish the job to make this vaccine available to veterinarians, but start the process of moving it towards clinical trials for humans.
What is the outlook this year? Has this year, the last 12 months, been particularly active for valley fever cases, Dr. Galgiani?
It looked like it was relatively similar to the year before, which was up from 2 or 3 years before that. The highest was in 2011, and then there was we go year to year differences, but right at the moment, it was up from past years, and with all the rains this winter, we're thinking that perhaps next fall we'll see a lot more cases.
I want to get back to the clinical setting when someone comes in and there's confusion. Could be pneumonia, could be valley fever. What kind of, is there a somewhat speedy test now that would show valley fever, or does that take a while?
Well, we'd love to have something that we could test right there in the doctor office.
Yeah.
And we don't have that. That would be called a point-of-care test. Unfortunately, we're still working towards that goal. A test has to be done as a specific antibody detection test, and it goes to a clinical laboratory, and the turnaround time for that is usually 2 or 3 days. So it's not months, but it's longer than we'd like.
If you have lived in Arizona like I have a long time, 35 years, will that necessarily make me less of a candidate to come down with valley fever, Dr. Galgiani?
Well, we know, from state data, that the average length of residence is about 12 and a half years. So it's not like in the first 2 or 3 months you're definitely going to be infected. And I've had patients actually in their 70s who had lived in Tucson their entire life come down with their original infection. So it gets less and less likely the longer you've lived here, but no one can be sure that they've had it just by the fact they've lived here for some length of time.
It would also be helpful to explain, I mentioned this is a fungal infection, but where does this fungus reside? In the soil or what? Could you quickly give us an overview?
It's in the Sonoran Desert. Primarily in the environment it likes is the undisturbed desert. And so we live in that desert, and so we here in Tucson and also in Phoenix, between the two population centers, we actually account for over 2/3 of all U.S. infections in that 150 miles across from Interstate 10 in Tucson through Pinal into Phoenix.
And one more question, getting back to the vaccine, which now looks very promising for our four-legged friends, our canine friends. What does the transition timeline look like if this would be effective for humans? When would the earliest this could be available for the human population?
Yeah, if funding was not an object, and that's actually part of the time frame to try to identify the funding to get going on this. But if that wasn't the issue, we'd probably be ready for the pivotal trials in 3 to 4 years. And then the pivotal trial is different. We're kind of used to COVID vaccines where you get an answer within months. But for the Valley Fever vaccine, it'd probably take another 3 years. So from here through approval at the FDA, I'm thinking 7, 8 years. But we'd be well along in the next 3 or 4.
Dr. Galgiani, always a pleasure to catch up with you, the director of the Valley Fever Center of Excellence, which was created, at least about 25, maybe almost 30 years ago, correct?
Well, you're close, 26 years.
Yeah, there you go.
And I think we've made a lot of progress in that time.
Well, congratulations on the progress you have made, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for the future. Thank you, sir.
Nice to talk to you, Bill.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The Buckmaster Show wants to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, which it's always a pleasure for me to talk about because I start to, well, let's face it, I haven't eaten lunch yet, and every day I talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, and I start thinking, you know, what would I like right now at Mona's? Well, probably a cinnamon roll would go a long way to satisfying my sweet tooth craving. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner Swan and Sunrise, home of the Danish Kringle. They are open at 6:30 in the morning, Tuesday through Saturday. They open 7 a.m. on Sunday. And as I've been saying now for a week or so, some advice about Mona's. Get there early, especially Saturday and Sunday, for the best choice of their wonderful, luscious pastries. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. We'll get an update on the TUSD governing board. Val Romero is with me. He'll be coming on live right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006. And the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Tomorrow, our Friday Focus interview, we'll be talking with the Tucson representative from that is on the Arizona Corporation Commission, Leah Marquez Peterson, will be with me in studio. But right now, with me in studio, Val Romero. Mr. Romero, the clerk of the five-member Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. He, along with Jennifer Ekstrom, are the two newest members of the board being elected in November. Mr. Romero, a small business owner and a graduate of Sal Point Catholic High School. Val, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. So how is it going? You were elected to the board, and now you've been elected the clerk of the board. What does the clerk do, first of all?
So basically the clerk for...
Is that kind of like a vice?
Vice, basically, yes. So say
chair.
Dr. Ravi can't be at a meeting. I run the meeting. I run the call to the audience when there's a call to the audience. So I'm just kind of the backup to Dr. Ravi, and then, like I said, other than the call to the audience, I'm just it's a title.
What are you learning about this district?
There's a lot of moving parts, and I'm immersing myself in so many different aspects of it, so I can learn these things, from having weekly meetings with Dr. Trujillo to help me answer the questions, to educate me on the different parts of the business aspect of TUSD, different programs, budgets, just everything when it comes to the TUSD. As far as that goes, they've got a great support staff. Whenever I have questions, I can ask. They get me answers to them. The other aspect of it is the schools. You know, it's been Love or Reading Month this month, so I've had an opportunity to go to, I think it's six or seven different schools the last few weeks to read to a lot of these students, but get a chance to meet the principals and the teachers and. There's a lot of teamwork that's going on in a lot of our schools that are out there that the public just doesn't see. Visiting these schools and seeing, you know, what's really happening in the classrooms and on campuses, I think would be surprising to a lot of people that we do have some good schools in the district.
The perception is so different from the reality in many cases with Tucson Unified. Many people say you just can't get a good education in the district.
Yeah, and TUSD does have a black eye for most people. Unfortunately, a lot of people are looking at things in the rearview mirror as opposed
right.
to what we've got going on. TUSD, for high school, and I mentioned this a little bit ago, schools, we have University High and Sabino High School are A-grade schools here in TUSD district.
How do we keep these parents looking at TUSD rather than going to a private school?
You know,
or a private school.
Right. And I think schooling, you know, having that personal choice for what's good for your students, and whether it be TUSD or charter schools or private schools. But there is so much diversity within the public schools within TUSD. So even though it just seems like it's going to be the same no matter where you go, that's not true. They've got GATE programs. They've got a program called OMA. They've got magnet schools. They've got so many different offerings. Visiting some of these schools as a parent, if you wanted to use a public schooling, is recommended because you can find what you're getting in some of these charter schools in our district. If you look hard enough, you know where to look.
A lot of these kids don't really have the motivation or the desire to go to a community college or a four-year university. They would rather get into the trades. Is that a good option for them?
That is a great...
And is that available for
that
them?
Is, yes, there is. There are okay. You know, programs like JTED. They have... You know, where there's on-hand training, where there be mechanics. I've gone to Choya. They have a welding area. They have screen printings, like saw at Sabino Canyon. But right now, being in business, trades are hurting in our community. And we need, you know, it's understand to go to college and, you know, get that college degree. But right now, trades is huge, and I know there's a lot of space in our workforce that's not being attended to, and I'm afraid of what our future is going to look like if we don't get more trade people out there. And I think the things TUSD is doing is going to be positive, is putting out some good trades people in our community.
You ran on trying to improve academic achievement. Mm-hmm. I think that was your number one goal. So how are you going to make that happen?
Well, there's going to be coming on up that report that we're, Dr. Trujillo is putting together to find out where we are, you know, TUSD across the state against like the Amphi District, the Vail District, the Catalina Foothills District. Putting these things on, you know, where we can actually see where they're at, now we have something measurable on how we achieve these things. You know, are we getting our kids to reading at grade level, doing the math, things of that nature? Some schools are doing better than others. One of the ones I visited, Utterbeck, you know, she had some kids coming into her middle school, you know, that, you know, were reading two grades lower than where they should be when they got there. Her goal with her team and her teachers is by eighth grade, she wanted to take them to make sure they're reading at grade level, writing at grade level, doing those different types of things. So it's leadership in some of these schools, and they turn around from, you know, I think it was 2 years, she went from an F to a B school.
That's quite a jump, huh?
A jump, exactly. And there are some schools, unfortunately, that are in that D to F that need some changes to get better. And, you know, we need to look at those types of things. Unfortunately, it's not going to be all A's and B's across the way. Ideally, it would be great. But seeing that something where we compare to the other public schools in our area is going to be huge. So we can map this out on how we're going to achieve this and get that academic achievement. You know, unfortunately, if I found out through testing, it's all from fourth grade on, because kindergarten through third, they don't do any type of, you know, academic testing. So we really don't know where they are before they get into fourth grade. And I'm not sure how we bridge that, but it's something I'm learning so much.
Well, you're to be congratulated, you and really anyone, I think, who runs for a school board, because this is a non-paying deal. You're not getting any money out of it. You're investing a lot of time and energy, and it's a public service, isn't it?
Yeah, it's you know, I'm doing it for...
It's part of what I know you believe in, what the Aloha spirit,
yes.
Right? You've been to Hawaii, I know, at least a dozen times. You've got a really interesting looking little vest on right now that's got
a little Hawaiian shirt.
Hawaiian shirt, yeah, and all that stuff.
Palm trees.
So you try to carry that over, don't you, into your personal life? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I've been, like you mentioned, we talked many times to Hawaii, but for me, it's kind of, you know, something special to me. It kind of grounds me. Mm-hmm. It helps me get connected. You know, the meaning of aloha means the presence of breath, you know, treating people with kindness, love, and respect, you know, doing unto others as you do unto, you know, you the golden rule. And it's just putting positive energy and being positive to everybody that you meet. And it's very, very important to me that I wear that out as much as possible. Like I said, I want to be as much of a positive person as possible, be happy, very loving, and I'm very, very, I guess I can also be emotional too. And
sure, of course. And aloha is an interesting word because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it can mean hello and goodbye.
Hello, goodbye, I love you. But the biggest one is presence of breath. And kind of give you an idea, the term haole that the Hawaiians named the white people, haole means without breath.
Really?
Yes. So that's kind of how that all, you know, so aloha, the presence of breath, and how they used to greet each other, you know, by, you know, embracing each other's breath ingredients.
So for you, it's a way of life and kind of a meditative type spirit.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. So when I go to Hawaii, usually I like to hike, so I'll right. just kind of disconnect from the world.
You go off the grid, don't you?
Pretty much.
Yeah. I hope you tell someone where you're going, because
I don't know what island I'm on.
Well, if you're on Oahu, the main island, and there's some, actually people think, oh, there's no remote areas on Oahu. Well, there are some very you get outside of Honolulu and on the way over to the west, the north coast of Oahu, there are some really jungly, beautiful, incredibly beautiful, but very remote areas on the island of Oahu. Val Romero, a pleasure talking with you. Good luck with you, and we'll bring you in here again sometime, okay?
Bill, thank you so much. It's been an honor, and you have an awesome day.
Thank you very much. Val Romero, who is the clerk of the 5-member Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. Midway point of the Buckmaster Show. It is the start of the Lenten season. Our spiritual and faith contributor, Father Robert Hendrickson, will be joining me next on the Buckmaster Show. We'll talk a little bit about Lent right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I am so glad again that wind is gone. I posted on my Facebook page, hey, I'm a child of the Windy City. I grew up in Chicago, but I really don't like real strong kind of blustery winds, and I associate it with, oh my goodness, 20 degrees below zero in Chicago and walking to school and migraine headaches and all that stuff. That's why I'm glad I am out here in Arizona. I did say there are some winds that I tolerate and actually like. I love the tropical trade winds. Val Romero was just here. He's talking about the aloha spirit. Well, in Hawaii, I don't mind the wind because it's a kind of a warm, moist trade wind. Anyway, let's talk about, before we talk with Father Robert Hendrickson, let's talk about our favorite nursery in town, Green Things, 3380 84 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. And Father Robert Green Things is practically your neighbor.
Just down the road.
Yeah. Practically your neighbor over there at St. Philip's. And when I go to visit St. Philip's, I, of course, go by Green Things, and a lot of people do. They have a beautiful 13-acre site, now home to Zocalo Village and some of the great merchandise. Jan and Jack, when they make their buying trips down to Mexico, they always have these, like, semis that come up full of goodies that they've purchased, and some of the Talavera pottery's great. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the websites. I just love Father Robert, our sponsors on the program. I try to only have sponsors, Father Robert, that are businesses that I support. So,
well, that makes sense. I mean, it's a bit hard to get behind something
Father Robert Hendrickson with us, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, where I worship, and Father Robert is one of our two dozen regular contributors to the program. And here we are, Father Robert, we are off and running on Lent, which is the Christian season of spiritual preparation before Easter. In Western churches, it begins on Ash Wednesday, which was yesterday. And I've been thinking a little bit about our conversation today. And Leo Tolstoy wrote, "The two most powerful warriors are patience and time." Patience, boy, I can agree with that. I've always had a little bit of a problem, kind of an impatient person. But when you think about Lent, you got the 40 days. We're all, you know, we want to get to Easter. We want to get to the joy of Easter Sunday. But there's some time we need to put in here before that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the season comes every year, and I think it becomes a spiritual reset for us. And the way I talk about it is you know, God is going to love us, you know, pretty much no matter what we do. This is the kind of profligate grace of God, is that He loves us no matter what. But we don't always sort of we're not always sort of close or aware of that love in a way that changes us, because things get in the way. And so this is what Lent is really about, is how do we do less of the things that get in the way of our relationship with God? How do we do less of the things that block our relationships or inhibit our relationships with other people? And then how do we begin to sort of manifest the ministry of Jesus, teaching and healing being present with one another in sort of ways that are intentional and loving. So how do we manifest that in our lives? That's really what Lent draws us toward, is into a deeper relationship with Jesus, with one another, and frankly, with ourselves.
Would you say that this is the season, when you look at the church calendar, if you had to pick a particular time, that this would be the most reflective time, the Lenten season?
I think so. I mean, it's designed to be reflective, and it's been it's such an ancient part of the church's history. So this, I'm trying to think. I think in 349 we have a record of Athanasius writing about the Lent, and we have other records from the 300s and a little bit earlier from the Didache from the 200s. And so this has been, you know, this season of preparation and fasting has been with us really since the beginning of the church's life together. And I think we recognized even then that these kind of periods of deep reflection were necessary. And I think, you know, these days that the contemporary parlance is, you know, mindfulness or awareness or presence. I mean, I think all of us are, you mentioned time, I think all of us are more and more aware that we're sort of rushing through our days without really considering how we're living them. And so I think part of what Lent is about is appreciating the gift that God has given us of life, appreciating the gift of time. And sort of being patient with ourselves and being patient enough to actually live into those things and not just take them for granted.
Yeah, and try to be gracious and have kind of a patient attitude, not only to others, but maybe to ourselves.
Well, absolutely. Yes. I mean, I think that we are usually our harshest critics.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's hard for people to recognize, I think, that the kind of spiritual damage we do to ourselves through sort of all the negative voices that become the kind of, you know, our internal voice, But, you know, when you think, I forget how many advertisements a day we see now. I saw this number the other day. Thousands of advertisements we see a day, especially with social media. And, you know, none of those advertisements is predicated on the idea that you're a pretty good person. You're pretty okay where the way you are. Mm-hmm. They're all sort of predicated on you need to buy this or act this way or do this or improve yourself in this way or another. And so, you know, sooner or later, it's inevitable that those kind of voices that kind of degrade and erode our sense of who we are and who God has made us to be become the kind of dominant voice in our internal dialogue. And so I think part of what Lent is a return to the first voice that called us who we were, which is as beloved. And so that, to me, is part of what Lent is. It's about sort of silencing those other voices that compete for our attention and learning to listen more deeply to the voice that is still within us.
You come from a background in the advertising world. You were, I believe, the youngest marketing director for Brooks Brothers, and you had to think a lot about how do I market a particular product, and you had to think a lot about, you were talking just now about voices, what's the voice of Brooks Brothers? What's going to move people to buy Brooks Brothers products? What was that process like for you?
Well, the nice thing is now I tend to sell a product with better long-term benefits.
You're selling a different product for sure, but there are different benefits for sure. Your product won't wear out. Not that a Brooks Brothers, Brooks Brothers products last a long time.
But in some ways they're kind of they're complementary questions, because you know often what we talked about at Brooks Brothers was not about sort of the product. We talked about the identity, sort of who did people imagine themselves being when they wore or bought something, if you notice that they, you know, ads for almost all clothing companies are aspirational, right? So they're traveling, they're jet setting, they're doing this, and so you help people imagine that they're going to be someone different if they just, you know, buy this new pair of socks or something, and I think it's the kind of fundamental American idea that we can, through what we acquire or how hard we work, that we can change who we are. And I think that what the church pushes back on that, the church pushes back and says, actually, you are who God has made you to be. And that is, you know, irrespective of what you buy, how hard you work, the fundamental fact that you're the beloved of God is never going to change. And I think that the sooner we can sort of relax into that reality, I think the quieter our heart becomes and the more sort of truthful and peaceful the way we live in the world becomes.
What about that logo on Brooks Brothers? There's kind of a religious feel to that with the Lamb of God. Do you have any idea about the origin of that logo?
So it's the Golden Fleece. So it was from Jason and the Argonauts, Jason and the Golden Fleece, the logo comes from.
Oh, I kind of thought about it as kind of the Lamb of God.
Well, it could be whatever you want it to be, Bill. I mean, we're not going to argue with the customer.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, do you have any idea what's happened to Brooks Brothers?
They went through some financial turmoil a number of years ago, and now that I think they've sort of emerged from that with new owners, but you know they were experiencing some of the challenges of kind of changing
retailing
marketplace
and
I think that you know they made a mistake. I think. That a lot of companies have made, where they thought, well, if we just hire the cheapest labor possible, that somehow that will balance our books. And actually, you know, so many companies have done that, and they've forgotten the fact that, you know, when someone comes to a store, whether it's a hardware store or a wood store or a clothing store, they want people who know what they're talking about. And I think we've sort of forgotten that in their rush to balance books and places.
All right, we're going to talk more with Father Robert Hendrickson from St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. After we take a break, we'll hear from our great sponsors right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is generously supported by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. One of our great supporters is over in New Mexico, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. You know, it's only about a three-hour drive over there. And a lot of the kids are going to have some time off. It's spring break will be coming up. A good time to do a little road trip, some outdoor activities like the Gila National Wilderness. If you're into indoor activities, the museum at Western New Mexico University is really nice. They've just upgraded it, and it has the finest collection of Mimbres pottery in the world. The Mimbres people from, let me see if I get this right, about 1200 AD, they left some gorgeous pottery. They've got wonderful examples at Western New Mexico University. Anyway, website, southwestnewmexico.org, what to do, where to stay, where to dine, all available on the website. We continue now our discussion on the 40 days of Lent. The Lenten season began yesterday. Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, and the Buckmaster Show contributor on faith and spirituality with me in studio. And I have in front of me, you were right, you said AD 300-something. It was AD 339. What is his name? The gentleman of Alexandria, Virginia. Yeah, Alexandria, Egypt.
Athanasius, probably.
Okay. He wrote that the Lenten fast was a 40-day fast. I wonder why that kind of came up. Why 40 days?
Well, you have Jesus's temptation in the wilderness, the 40 days in the wilderness.
Oh.
So it's designed to mirror that. And it's, you know, the the period of Lent, really, there were several sort of elements to it. One of them was this kind of time of spiritual preparation for Easter. But there were two other elements to it, too. One was that people who had, as our Book of Common Prayer says, committed notorious sins, whatever those could be, and were not in communion with the church, during that time they were reconciled back into the life of the church, and so were able to receive communion again at Easter. And then it was also a time of preparation for folks who were what were called catechumens, people who were preparing for baptism. And it was fairly rigorous. I mean, you know, people now... you're lucky if you get them to cancel a golf game for a baptism, but they had to go through 13 exorcisms before they were baptized, and so that used to be the old practice, and you'd go through years of preparation, and then that time of Lent was the kind of most intense time of preparation for Easter.
13
exorcisms.
Which is kind of an unlucky number.
Yeah, well, maybe that's where it comes from. I don't know.
I hope it's not an unlucky number, because we're in our 13th year with the radio program, and so far so good. But some people just actually kind of go against the grain. You'll see some of these, you know, quarterbacks in the NFL will wear number 13. Race car drivers will say number 13th, like 13, like saying, "Yeah, I'm going to turn it around."
There you go.
Make things happen. So we have the signature event observed by Christians is this period of fasting and giving up something, repentance. How big a deal is that component?
Well, I mean, you know, no one was ever saved by giving up chocolate. I mean, I think the kind of modern kind of temptation is to say, well, I'm going to give up, whatever these kind of small things. But really, the
not coffee.
Not coffee. No, Lord, no. Coffee. But the real question is not necessarily the thing you're giving up, but what does the thing represent? So what kind of, you know, in the old language of the church, inordinate desires do you have that are perhaps skewing who you are and your relationships with other people? So, for example, somebody might say, "Well, I'm going to give up swearing for Lent." Mm. Well, the question might not actually be the language. The question might be the underlying anger that causes you to swear.
Ooh,
right?
Good
and so,
point.
So really the
maybe
the,
give up some of that anger.
Right. And so really I think the point is, if people want to do, I think, Lent in a way that's deeper and more reflective, is to not just sort of give up, you know, a thing, but really look more deeply at what that thing represents in their life. How is it impeding their relationship with God or with their family or friends?
You know, we started our session talking about patience and time. We are a very impatient people, and I'm just generalizing the heck out of this, but all of the devices and all of the digital society has not helped in any regard in that direction.
No. I mean, I don't know if you saw the CDC report that came out last week about the sort of mental health of teenagers around the country. Mm-hmm. Some of the top line takeaways from that, 25% of teenage girls have made a suicide plan in the last year.
Oh my goodness.
25% of LGBT teens have attempted suicide in the last year. It's having a devastating impact on us. And you know, one of the highest rates of suicide in Arizona is in the foothills among men who are 55 to 65. You know,
wow.
So, you know, here we are. We're the wealthiest nation in human history, and we're killing ourselves. Mm. And so something is deeply, deeply wrong in our sort of national spirit. I can't help but think that the rise of so many different sort of measures of loneliness and isolation and deaths of despair, deaths from alcohol abuse, opioid addiction, all those sorts of things. All that stuff is not, you know, it is not accidental that that's all happening right now at one time. And so I think part of what we sort of need a kind of national pause where we all sort of step back and say, you know, what is it we're living for and why? And you see it playing out in our national political culture in so many different ways, that kind of anger and divisiveness and disconnection from one another that I don't think is incidental, but I think is actually at the root of so many of our problems right now, both at the individual level and at the communal level.
And the disconnect, one way to reconnect is a foundation like what goes on at the community at St. Philip's.
Absolutely. Finding people to reconnect with and finding people, you know, with whom you have differences that you're willing to sort of engage with and that you're willing to be friends with, and finding people who with whom you can go into conversation about sort of deep questions in your life. And I think this is one of the real sources of, I think, real poverty in many of our lives, is we don't have people to discuss the what's really going on at the deepest level, and what are we passionate about? What do we care about? You know, so many of us are sort of busy with one distraction that distracts us from another distraction, that we never get to the point where we are still enough to actually let those deeper questions manifest themselves.
I do want to give our listeners a heads up about a very interesting speaker you have coming, talking about the Shroud of Turin.
Yes, one of our parishioners, it's his son, and he is coming to do, and he's done a ton of research on the Shroud of Turin, and you know, part of his talk is really looking at the evidence for and against its authenticity, but also the sort of history of the thing itself, how research has been done with it. I'm excited about the presentation. I'm really looking forward to it.
It's going to be Saturday afternoon, March the 18th, 1 o'clock, at the church, correct?
Correct.
Where can people, and you're trying to bring in, this is something new, at the start of the year, you're kind of bringing like different speakers in, speaker series.
Yeah, different speakers. I mean, we've talked for several years about it. Every summer we have a partnership with the University of Arizona, and their school of medieval history. And so one of the things we're looking at is, can we broaden those kind of speaker series in other ways? So we've talked about bringing in guests who talk about the connection between faith and art, faith and public policy. And so we're looking at, I'm excited. We're so sort of looking at a range of guests for the coming year. And so looking forward to getting those names out there.
And again, that sounds like it's going to be an interesting talk. It's Saturday afternoon, 1 o'clock in the afternoon at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church on River and Campbell. It's March 18th, the presentation on historic church artifacts, and the gentleman who will be speaking is an expert on the Shroud of Turin. So there's a lot of interesting history there.
Absolutely.
Any final thoughts about this Lenten season? Have you made any kind of decision about giving up anything particularly?
Well, the challenge is that, you know, we were talking about this before. Mm-hmm. I lost some weight recently, and so now, you know, giving up
50
food,
pounds,
something
since
like
November,
that, something like that.
Whoa.
Yes. But yeah. But it means that I don't have my sort of fallback of giving up sugar because I've already done that.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at some other possibilities.
All right. We will talk to you again as Easter approaches. Thank you, Father Robert.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
All right. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. And again, a reminder, our Friday Focus interview tomorrow, we'll be talking about the Arizona Corporation Commissioner, Leah Marquez Peterson, will be with me, along with my buddy from the Arizona Daily Star, columnist Tim Steller, will be with me in studio. All right. On behalf of everybody here at KVOI, Father Robert, wishing everybody the best this afternoon, along with Tom on the other side of the glass, and me, Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a great afternoon.